And we will move on to our last case for today, United States against Perkins. Mr. Steele.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. With the court's permission, I'd like to concentrate my argument on the second point raised in my brief. I must concede that with regard to the first point, the denial of the motion to suppress and the admission of the evidence that was seized in the search, that the Supreme Court, the United States Supreme Court in U.S. versus Sampson, has decreed that the parolee's expectation of privacy is greatly diminished, and that the Illinois Supreme Court in People versus Wilson did hold, as the government has indicated, that a parolee's house may be searched with something less than reasonable suspicion. Obviously, that to a great extent vitiates my arguments in my brief, and so I would like to.
That you have preserved it for whatever future tribunal might want to look at it. I'm not sure this court's free to disregard Sampson, so.
And that's correct, Your Honor. With regard to the point I raised in the second issue in my brief, with regard to the introduction of the evidence, the 404B evidence, the trial court permitted the government to introduce three prior convictions of my client, two of which were for possession of a controlled substance. My client was convicted, charged and convicted in this case, not with possession of controlled substance, but with two counts of possession with intent to deliver. Presumably, the element that the court attempted, I'm sorry, that the government attempted to prove with regard to the 404B evidence, in other words, the basis for the admission of the evidence, presumably was to prove either intent or motive. As this court is well aware, the 404B evidence is not permitted to be introduced solely to prove the propensity of the defendant to commit an offense. Bad acts evidence simply cannot be introduced for that intent. There are a list of factors for which 404B evidence may be admitted, including motive and intent. There are a number of other factors for which such evidence may be introduced. However, I fail to see in this case where, again, my client was convicted of four counts, two of which were possession charges. I cannot see how the introduction of convictions for possession with intent to distribute in any way advanced the cause of determining an appropriate element of the offense.
Now, your client conceded that he knew the drugs were in the house and that they were drugs, and he didn't say, oh, this is a bunch of...
My client made a post-arrest statement in which he essentially admitted to the possession of the cannabis. He did not admit to possession of the cocaine. He did not admit to possession of the weapon in furtherance of the drug offense.
And now, what's he charged with here? Possession with intent to distribute? Is that right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Yeah, that's what he's current charge. That's the present.
He was charged and convicted of possession with intent to distribute. That's correct. Two of the convictions that were introduced were not for possession with intent to distribute. They were simple possession charges. It is our position that...
Of course, when we talk about specific intent, we're talking about intent to distribute.
That's absolutely correct. And the case law clearly says that 404B evidence may be introduced to prove intent and that it is admissible in a specific intent offense. But my point is that the admission of convictions for mere possession do not, I believe, advance the inquiry as to intent to deliver. The possession is one thing. Possession with intent to deliver is something else. So for that reason, I don't believe that the
intent an issue in this case, then?
I'm sorry?
Is intent an issue here?
Yes, sir, it is. No question.
Well, why is it an issue if he's not charged with intent to distribute? What's the intent issue?
In this case, he's charged with possession with intent to distribute.
Okay.
And that is a specific intent offense.
So he's denying that he admits to having the drugs, but he denies that he's going to distribute them. Is that?
Well, that's, I think, correct, Your Honor. And my point is, whether or not even that he admitted it, the issue of his intent, these prior to possession charges are not probative in any way of his intent, and for that reason should not have been admitted under 404B.
How did it hurt you? He admits he is in possession, and so he was in possession on other occasions. What's the big deal?
And that goes, obviously, Your Honor, to one of the prongs of the test, which is, does the prejudicial value of the evidence outweigh...
The other one is, does it make a bit of difference?
The probative value. I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
So the other thing is, does it make a bit of difference, or is it just, even if it's error, is it, you know, harmless error? He says, I possessed it. They prove he's possessed it before, but
well,
whether they should or shouldn't is not really a big issue.
And we would contend, Your Honor, that it is not harmless error.
I didn't expect you to confess. It's going to change your mind.
When you look at the record, the 404B evidence is not only the prior convictions, but also an officer testifying regarding a previous arrest. I would suggest that not only with regard to the drug offenses, but also with regard to the possession of the weapon in furtherance of the drug offense, that the 404B evidence, in fact, is something that was prejudicial. It was not harmless error.
Save yourself about 30 seconds in rebuttal. You're into your rebuttal time. I see you got a part.
Yeah, and I understand that, Your Honor, and I will reserve the balance for rebuttal. Thank you.
All right, Mr. Crow.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court, James Crow for the United States. Taking the issues as Mr. Steele has raised them in turn, to address your question, Your Honor, as to whether or not intent is an issue in the case, I think just to clarify, there were two counts.
You want to raise that piston? There's a little button down. Oh, no, there's a button that will raise the whole damn thing for you.
Oh, I'll just pull this up, Your Honor. I don't want to mess things up any further.
Well, I thought you said in your brief that this was introduced to show knowledge and something else, isn't it?
Knowledge, intent, and absence of mistake or knowledge were the primary reasons that we offer both on the record and in our brief, Your Honor. And it's relevant here because both of the narcotics violations alleged in the superseding indictment are possession with intent to distribute. For clarity's sake, for the Court's benefit here today, the defendant in his post-arrest statement that was videotaped and offered to the jury as evidence admitted to possessing marijuana, some 91 grams of marijuana, that was found in the exact same location as some 16 grams of crack cocaine. And, in fact, the evidence was that it may have been actually underneath the crack cocaine. The marijuana was underneath the crack cocaine. So the substance he's denying any knowledge of, i.e. the crack cocaine, is underneath the 91 grams of marijuana that he admits having possessed and having sold. So the defendant, as we've asserted both in the district court and on appeal, places at issue both his knowledge and his intent with respect to the crack cocaine that is comprised of some 16 grams in approximate 1 gram chunks. The evidence was there were 16 separate chunks. That is
What's the intent? Knowledge involves, is he knew it was a drug that was there? Is that the
correct, Your Honor, point? Knowledge and familiarity with the substance under this court's guidance in the Lewis case from 1997.
Well, where's the intent? What's that all?
The intent to distribute it, Your Honor, and that comes full circle in terms of the evidence that we adduced at trial that the defendant possessed 1.1 grams of crack cocaine on his person that was discovered in the booking area of the jail where he was ultimately processed to be taken in as an inmate. The defendant's statement as to that amount of crack cocaine was that he, quote-unquote, found it in the booking area. So he again places that at issue.
Did he agree that he had the marijuana with intent to possess?
He did, Your Honor. He admitted to selling marijuana.
So the question was not whether intent to distribute marijuana, it was whether intent to distribute the cocaine.
That's correct, Your Honor, the crack cocaine. And I'd note that his three priors, and this will address your Honor's question.
And he just said, I just want to be clear about this. He said he didn't have...
He didn't have
the cocaine, as I understand.
His statement was that it must have been his girlfriend's who was a co-occupant of the residence. He proclaimed no knowledge as
that
to the crack cocaine.
That isn't even a gallon of them, for heaven's sake.
I'm sorry?
It's not even a gallon of them.
No,
well, he didn't ever get around to talking about distribution, then, I guess.
Yeah, he did about the
not as to the crack.
But he did as to the marijuana.
Judge Bowers, correct. And less gallant all the more, given that she was carrying his child at the time.
I'm talking about the crack, though. He didn't ever get around to talking about distribution. Is that
correct? And at multiple junctures in the videotaped interview that the jury heard, he denied any knowledge of that, saying it must have been his girlfriend's. And in fact, he was asked at the conclusion of that interview, now, taking into account that this is the woman carrying your child, you want to leave the dope on her? Yes, was his answer. So in terms of his prior
gallant, really.
In terms of his prior convictions and bringing making those relevant, Your Honors, I note that we have an ironic situation here. There were three total prior convictions for possession and possession with intent to distribute cocaine. The two possession convictions, that is just simple possession, were for amounts of cocaine under 15 grams. Ironically, the possession with intent to distribute count that he had been convicted of in St. Clair County State Court was possession with intent to distribute. Our argument as to that, Your Honors, was that the defendant has knowledge that even 1 gram amounts of cocaine have value, and that was consistent with the evidence that we have in our case that the 1.1 gram found on him in the booking area has value sufficient to render it distributable. Likewise, the individual single gram chunks, 16 of them found in his closet, have value when distributed. And so this goes to his intent to distribute, even the prior for possession with intent to distribute 1 gram. The fact that he had possessed larger amounts in the past shows his knowledge of distributable amounts of those substances. As to the challenge that the evidence we brought in by way of the testimony of Sergeant Michael Dixon from the Madison County Sheriff's Department regarding a specific instance, and this would have been the conviction for possession with intent to distribute 1 gram, was somehow over the top, I'd submit, Your Honors, that as Judge Bowers pointed out, there can't be any colorable claim of prejudice here. I counted it up and asserted in the brief that we filed, Your Honors, but as to Sergeant Dixon's testimony, it amounted to a total of 9 pages of testimony, 14 minutes in all, according to the minutes of the district court. That was less than 1/4 of the testimony heard on the final day of some 3.5-4 day trial. And that was after all of the government's evidence in chief had been presented. That's to say he was among the last substantive evidence presented. But all the evidence in terms of what happened at the location where all of the drug evidence that was received by the jury had been found had been presented to the jury. So this is not a case where we led with the 404B and the evidence in chief followed. It's quite the opposite. And in fact, Sergeant Dixon's testimony was interrupted by the district court to give a cautionary instruction consistent with pattern 3.04, which had also been read immediately before the court took judicial notice of these three prior cocaine-related convictions and immediately after. So in that vein, Your Honors, we have 8 transcript lines of cautionary instructions being read, some 4 before and 4 after the 404B evidence is presented by the district court, that bookend 9 lines of 404B. The court simply recites, at our request, nothing more than the fact of these convictions having been entered against the defendant previously and their respective case numbers, and that's it. That was the manner in which we offered it. It comports with this court's guidance in Lewis, and to do anything otherwise, Your Honors, would at this point upend that decision, I'd submit. I'd submit that in sum, the district court took our lead and administered the 404B evidence and its receipt by the jury with the utmost of caution, and it was therefore vigilant against prejudice, as this court has pointed out in the Strong case, wherein the similar cautionary instructions were administered. If there are no further questions on the 404B, we take essentially the appellant's position on the first issue as it being governed by both Sampson as interpreted by People v. Wilson, I'll yield the balance of my time.
All right. Thank you very much. Anything further, Mr. Steele?
Just briefly, with regard to the limiting instructions, I would just mention to the court that this court in the DeCastro decision noted that giving a limiting instruction is like telling a jury not to think about a hippopotamus. To tell someone not to think about it is to assure that at least they will have a fleeting image of it.
I thought it was a limited instruction, what they were to think about. What they were to think about the evidence of what it was for, not that they weren't to think about it at all.
Well, and
what you're talking about is an old one. It says that tell a jury to disregard the last remark is to say you go to stand in the corner and don't think of a white rabbit. The only thing you can think of is a white rabbit. But that's
and that is a distinction, Your Honor. I wouldn't disagree with that. However, I think the principle still is the same.
Agree with you.
All right. Thank you very much. And you were appointed, Mr. Steele?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So the court thanks you for your efforts for your client and for the court, and we thank you as well.
I assume you're a member of the Steele family of note in the Southern District.
That's right. My dad is the district judge.
Yeah. And there are other members of your family. Yes. Known them for years. Nice people.
He looks like them.
Very good. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will stand in recess until tomorrow.